All right, good afternoon. We're gonna start right on time. I hope you're enjoying Build so far. I heard something interesting in the keynote this morning that I thought was, it really resonated with me. I think it was Scott Guthrie said, it's never been a better time to be a developer. It's never been a better time to be a developer. That seems so very true. I want to begin really quickly with a question. How many people in here believe they're going to build a successful application? A successful application, really popular. You should all be raising your hand, right? Darn right, you should all be raising your hand. I have a quote. If you are successful, enterprise customers will require you to integrate your application with their enterprise identity management system. Enterprises rely on these identity management systems to do things like control access, control risk. They're very important assets that they invest in deeply. And if you build a successful application that's meaningful for that company or that organization, they're going to ask you to integrate with it. Does anybody know where this quote comes from, by the way? Actually, I just said it. Okay. So, totally. You heard it here first, though. You can say you heard it here first. And because I work for Microsoft and I work on Active Directory, I'm going to amend this slightly. You might have heard, or you may have heard from your customers, that Active Directory is a very popular part of enterprise identity management systems, and people actually want you to integrate with Active Directory. So if you're successful, you're going to need to integrate with Active Directory. My name is Stuart Kwan. I'm a program manager in the Azure Active Directory team. We've been working on a capability that we call Identity Management as a Service, otherwise known as Azure Active Directory, and I'm going to talk to you today about how integrating with Azure Active Directory integrates you with Active Directory. In fact, it makes it much simpler than it used to be in the past, especially if you're building a cloud application, you're building a mobile application. How do you integrate when your customer asks you this? I'm going to show you at a very high level how you can do that and some of the benefits that you can get from doing this integration, not only by making things simpler and easier for your customer, but also we can help you promote your application with Active Directory, Azure Active Directory, and with Office 365. So we'll go through what is identity management as a service and how does it change the game. We'll talk about some of these benefits that you can reap. We'll do a little demo of how to integrate. I'm not going to go into super detailed code level stuff. There's a couple of other sessions, or a couple, three other sessions here at Build where you can get much more detail. Vittorio Bertacci has a couple of sessions, one on building web apps, one on building native and mobile applications. Matt Veloso has a session specifically on tips and tricks and troubleshooting. But we'll go very high level here to give you an idea of what the integration takes. And then we'll look at some of the future things. So what we're doing right now is a waypoint on a much longer journey. There's a ton of really interesting stuff that we're doing in identity at Microsoft. All right, let's begin by talking about what does it take to integrate today with Active Directory or with an enterprise identity management system. Typically, when a customer comes and asks you this today, they ask you for a couple of things. First of all, they want federation. And that's not just because they want single sign-on for their end users, but it's also because they want, when their users are disabled in their identity management system on-premises, they want them to lose access to your application. And if you have separate user accounts in your application, then they're not going to remember to go and disable them and stuff like that. But with federation, they don't have to worry about that. The second thing that's often a challenge for you is you might need to know when the user is available to use your application before they first sign in. Maybe just in time, signing into your application through federation might not be enough for you. You might need to know more details about the user than you get in a sign-in token. You might need to know information about the groups they're in. You might need to know where they sit in the organizational hierarchy or other kinds of details that you're then forced to have your customer give you somehow. And many of you have probably done this where you have a part of your management console where the customer uploads an Excel file or something with details in it that they had to produce, or you have an API that they call and they're constantly calling it. And that's just more work for you and for your customer when they want to onboard into your system. So if that's today without identity management as a service, how does identity management as a service change the dynamic here? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to bring the identity management system to the cloud. And when we bring it to the cloud, a couple of very important things are going to happen. Number one, your application can now depend on a very consistent interface to get at identity management data, both to get at the directory, which you probably couldn't even get at in the past, unless you made special arrangements with your customer to be able to tunnel in with LDAP or something down into their on-premises directory. Now the directory data is in the cloud where you can get at it, you can query it, you can even manipulate it. And setting up federation is no longer a complicated exercise with the exchange of somewhat esoteric parameters that you might do with one of your support engineers over the phone or that you might have built a self-service application for. But often setting up federation is just not an easy task. And, what we're doing is making it so you can programmatically establish the single sign-on relationship with a customer. And all the customer is going to experience is one-click consenting to using your application. We'll see that in the demo. The other thing that we do with identity management as a service is we create the essential connectivity between those on-premises identity management systems that these organizations have been building over the last couple decades, and we provide a way to get that information up into the cloud, regardless of what they might be running on-premises. And this is a particular challenge for us as Microsoft, because we create this connective tissue, and the on-premises customer might be running Active Directory with ADFS, they might be running other products from Oracle, from CA, from IBM, and we take care of making sure that they can mate their on-premises system with their cloud system. And as we've been doing this and building up Azure Active Directory and building the service in the cloud, we've also noticed that it's possible now for us to provide some essential identity management services through the cloud instead of the customer having to deploy software on-premises for it. So things like self-service password reset or self-service group management, we can now do in the cloud with services running in the cloud, and we can make those changes go back on-premises. So now we have this connectivity which basically takes the on-premises directory and projects it into the cloud and also allows changes in the cloud to come back on-premises. It's really one logical directory between Azure Active Directory and Active Directory. So it's really just Active Directory. Now the question that I posed earlier was, if you're successful, you're going to need to integrate with Active Directory. Well, as it turns out, Azure Active Directory is Active Directory, ergo, if you integrate with Azure Active Directory, you've integrated with Active Directory. Did I say that too fast? You get that? Okay, so if you're integrating with Azure AD, you're done. In fact, we see customers more and more pushing the responsibility for managing access to applications and doing these identity management functions. We see them pushing that more and more to the cloud side of the equation because it's simply easier for them. They don't have to deploy any on-premises software. We do all the work of keeping the system running. We do all the work of adding the features. They just have to go and manage it from the cloud, and they have to keep the connectivity between the cloud and on-premises. So it's a very attractive proposition, and we think that and this is the way we're driving, this is the place we want you to be integrating your applications. So as it turns out, Azure Active Directory is a very significant running service for Microsoft already today. Today we host identity management for more than 5 million organizations, and we have more than a half a billion objects, and this number goes up fairly rapidly. Satya mentioned last week in our earnings call that we have 50 million active Office 365 users a month, and all of those users, everybody using Office 365, is using Azure Active Directory as the way that they're signing into Office 365. So there's 50 million active users, and on a given day, we do between 1 and 2 billion authentications, and we expect that number to continue going up. It's going to get more and more. So chances are, if you're building a new application today, or if you have an existing application, you want to sell it to organizations, chances are that organization, or there's a good chance that organization already has Azure Active Directory. So if you can provide this integration, then there's a number of these benefits that can come to you. You can get single sign-on between Office 365, for example, in your application. You can see their directory, and there's a bunch of other things. In fact, let's talk a little bit beyond just being able to now integrate with enterprise identity management systems and fulfill that request from your customers. There's ways through Azure Active Directory that we can help you promote your application as well. So when you register your application with Azure Active Directory, it can appear in an application gallery that we have today that people see. So when an administrator is in doing their centralized identity management in Azure AD, they can see this gallery. Today, the gallery, although it's probably difficult for you to catch in the back of the room, has more than 2,400 applications in it. Some of these are applications that developers like you have integrated with Azure AD. Some of them are ones that Microsoft has integrated the application with Azure AD. We've gone and done the work to plug these things together. But in the gallery, you can find applications. And very simply, if you take a look at the bottom of the screen, you can the customer or who's looking at the gallery can initiate the connection with your application right there within the gallery. And literally, they just click through it, and then they're set up with you. And you get information about them, and there's no fancy setup. You know exactly what's going on because you're connected to the service. One thing that we're doing with the Office team is they're building a new Office store as well. So if your customer is an Office 365 customer, and the administrator spends part of their day in the portal, the Office 365 management portal, there will be a store where they can buy applications. If you register in Active Directory, your application will appear in the store, and it can be purchased amongst all these other applications that are in the store. Once a customer decides to use your application and acquires it through the gallery or through the store, or even through visiting your website and you initiating the connection between Azure AD and your application, the app will show up in their My Apps list. So here's a user who uses Office 365, and they've got the Office 365 applications, and your application can be there. Further, if they pin your application to their launcher, then when they have their everyday activity that they're doing inside Office 365, so if they're in SharePoint, or if they're in OneDrive, or if they're in Outlook, and they click the waffle in the top right-hand corner, then they'll see the applications that they've pinned, and your application can be right here. And this can help promote user engagement. They don't have to remember where your application is to go back and visit it again. You can have that exposure right there in the pinned launcher so that they can keep coming back to it very easily. So those are some of the ways that we can help you promote the application. We can help you integrate with enterprise identity management systems. There's an awful lot that we're doing as specialists in identity and authentication to also kick up the ability for us to protect these organizations that have entrusted us with their identity management system. So we have some advanced security monitoring that we're doing. I'm going to show you a couple of these scenarios that we protect against today. There's others that we are talking about just yet. And I want you to think about, if your application has a way to sign people in that you've built yourself, would you ever spend the time to invest in this sort of monitoring? We will, but chances are, unless you want to hire a whole bunch of people that are specialists in identity management, these are things that aren't going to get to the top of your stack rank as you're doing your work. So, of course, all identity management systems provide ways to, if a user tries a bad password a number of times, to do things like lock them out. But we also watch for the more insidious attack, where someone's trying bad passwords, but at a very slow rate. So they're trying to brute force a user at a very slow rate. And what we do is we look to see if at any point they become successful. If they actually guess the user's password, then we can look at the pattern and go, well, look, there were all these bad checks and then a good one. This might be a successful brute force password attack. So we flag that and signal that to the administrator. Another thing that we do is we look for sign-in requests that come from quote-unquote suspicious places. So if we have a sign-in request that are coming from an anonymizer network, something like a Tor, then that might be someone who's trying to attack you but cover up their attack by coming through an anonymizer. So we signal those as well. We have a scenario, this is the easiest one to explain. It's just like if you've ever gone on a trip and you've used your credit card and your credit card was blocked because it appeared that you're using your credit card in a place you hadn't been before. In this case, we look for someone who signed in one location, physical location, and then signed in another physical location, which is geographically distant such that it's unlikely they actually made that travel, right? So they signed in Seattle, and then they signed in South Africa. Within 5 minutes of each other, chances are they didn't actually make that trip. So we can signal that as an unlikely travel scenario and warn the administrator. Because our system is multi-tenant, we can also see attacks that are spanning the system. So let's say that there's a bad guy out there, and the bad guy is trying bad passwords from a single IP address across many different Office 365 tenants. Well, we can see that in our log, and we can detect, hey, look, this one IP address is trying all these different bad password combinations across all these tenants. We'd better flag that as a problem to the administrator. And then finally, within Microsoft, we do a ton of work in anti-malware, and we find and we crack botnets. There's news about this on a fairly regular basis. We learn the IP addresses of infected machines, and we can share that information within Microsoft, so from within our digital crimes unit, to our sign-in systems, so that we can flag if we're seeing sign-in requests coming from known infected devices. Okay, so that's just a few examples of ways that we provide protection for users. And these are things that we will continue to invest in because we are building expertise and we're going to offer this identity management as a service capability. These are things that it's probably not a good idea for you building your application to invest in. It's better if you could simply take advantage of what we're doing. So we can help you integrate with Active Directory. We can help you promote your application. We can help you protect your users.
Do you charge us
more? And we don't charge you anything. In fact, because of the amount of time that that I have for today's talk, I had to take out a couple of slides. One of the things I wanted to mention, and thank you for the prompt. Azure Active Directory is absolutely free. For basic sign-in services, for basic directory services, you can get it when you're doing your development. Your customers can get it, and they can use it with your application absolutely free. Now, there are premium services, like self-service password reset, self-service group management, and such, that we make available for a fee. But the basic directory services and the basic sign-in services are available at no charge. The protection services are also available at no charge, but the reports that are associated with them are part of the premium offering. All right, so how do you integrate with Azure AD? How much effort is this going to cost you? There's really three essential steps to this, which I'll demonstrate. The first is, and this is where the magic really begins here, you just need to register your application with Azure AD. Once we know about it, we can help matchmake your application with your customers. But we have to know some essential details. We're going to give you a client ID. And this is just like building a Facebook application or a Google application or a Dropbox application. You need to go to their application console. You need to register so that they know about you. So we'll give you a client ID. We need to know this thing called the redirect URL. This is the safe place for us to send tokens back to you when a user signs in. You might have a secret for your app depending on the kind of OAuth you're doing, and I'll show that in a moment. And then if you're going to call APIs from Microsoft, like if you're going to call the directory, then you also need to declare those permissions up front. So once you've done that and you're registered, you add code to sign users in, and send sign-in requests to Azure AD, receive the response, decode the response, make sure it came from Azure AD, get the information about the user out. If you're going to call an API, that response will also contain a thing called an OAuth auth code. And you're going to take that auth code and you're going to redeem it for tokens to use to call our APIs, be it the Office APIs or the directory itself. And then step three, you call those APIs with those tokens. The directory is just a REST interface, an OData REST interface. You can call it to get information about users. Now, let me go through very quickly the essential protocol pattern for at runtime, how this works after you've registered, and then we'll show an example in code. Let's imagine you're building a web app and you want to support Azure AD as a way to sign in, and a user is visiting your application and they're not signed in at all. So it's tabula rasa, we're beginning from nowhere, and they push a button on your app to cause them to sign into Azure with Azure AD. So you're going to send the sign-in request to us via the user through a 302. And that's going to be, in the example I'm going to show later, an OpenID Connect sign-in request. And at that point, the user has some interaction with us through the browser. They enter their name and password. They might do multi-factor auth, da-da-da-da. And finally, they're signed in. And the result of that sign-in is going to be a post back to your redirect URL with a token representing the user, which you're going to verify the signature on, and also that authorization code if you're going to be calling APIs. Once you receive that and you make sure, yes, indeed, this came from Azure AD, you check the signature on the token with a key that we've published in metadata so you can come read it. You can now set up your session with the customer, with the customer's browser, so you're going to put a cookie down, and now they're just talking to you and you know who they are. Now, if you want to call the APIs, you take that authorization code and you call a token endpoint on Azure AD. It's part of the OAuth protocol and the OpenID Connect protocols. You take the authorization code with your application's credentials and you redeem it for what's called an access token and refresh token. The access token is what you're going to use to call the API, and the refresh token you hang on to so that you can get new access tokens. If the access token that you have expires, or if you want to call a different API, without prompting the user again, the refresh token lets you get a new access token. It's almost like if you're familiar with Kerberos, almost like a ticket getting ticket. And now that you have the access token, you can go ahead and you can call the Graph API. All right, so let's take a look at this in demo form. Of course, I have to unlock my computer. So let's begin by looking at an application I previously registered. Of course, all of our sample applications that we build for Azure AD are extremely simple apps. This one's a to-do list app. And you can actually get the code for this. This is in my GitHub repo. I'll show that URL again in a moment so that you can find it. But it's To-Do List Reimagined, which I stole from Vittorio Bertacci. But I loved the acronym, or the short form for it, TDLR. Do you see what I did there? Anybody? It's kind of like TLDR. Anyway, so there's a couple of us. Jeez. Was it a really good lunch? It's like, you're all, was there a really heavy sugary dessert? Anyway. I know identity is exciting, but I need you to hold your enthusiasm. There's a couple of things in here that are important. There's this sign-in URL. This is the URL that we're going to send the user to if they initiate out of that app launcher. So if they click your button in the app launcher, this is the URL that we're going to send them to. So you need to provide that to us. And you can show us a logo, so that can show up in the app launcher. This particular application is called a multi-tenant application because any tenant in Azure AD can sign into this app. If it was a single-tenant application, then only users in the tenant where it was registered could access it. That's if you're building like a line of business app within a particular company, and it's not for everybody else in the world. It's just for your company. But this one's multi-tenant. Here's the client ID. That's used in the code. And this app also has a key because it's going to call the Graph API. And then finally, here are those two. In fact, I have two redirect URLs registered for this app. One for the version that's running up in Azure Websites, tdlr.azurewebsites.net. And then I have another one for my local debug that we'll show later. These are two locations where it's safe to send back the response that includes the token for the user and such. Finally, we see that this application asks for two permissions to call the directory itself. The sign in, enable sign on and read users' profiles one is the essential one that lets users sign in. It's like the minimum you need to ask for to build an Azure AD integrated app. It lets you get the token for the user and look at the user's object specifically in the directory, but nothing beyond that. This app also asks for read directory data because it has a people picker in it. I'm going to show you how you can just browse users in the directory if you need to build a pick list to give people access to something, for example. So this one also goes read directory data. All right, that's the app registration itself. Let's go to the app, and I'll just refresh it really quickly. And there, you'll notice that there's two buttons here that I've added to the top of the template, the ASP.NET template. One that says sign your organization up for TDLR, and the other one which is just sign in. Now, the reason why I have this link is so that an administrator can sign up for the application on behalf of the entire organization. And in fact, for this particular application today, it's necessary for an administrator to sign up for this application because it wants read directory. And the read directory permission that's there right now is very powerful. It allows the user to read the entire contents of the directory and pull it down. So we require the administrator to say it's OK to use this app. We have some new permissions that are coming for the Graph API, where you'll be able to allow an ordinary user to consent to see part of the directory enough to build a people picker that just didn't make it for this week. It'll probably be out next week, in which case this will be a far better demo next week when I do it at Ignite. But anyway, what I'm going to show right now is the administrator signing up for the to-do list application. And I'm going to sign this up for my user account, which is in my squantoso.com tenant. And did you see what I did there? Oh, man. Squantoso. Anyway, I think it's particularly interesting. I'll sign in. So I go to sign in. Now, this is the step. This is the one click that's going to create federation between the to-do application and the Squantoso tenant, I have to consent to this application being able to read directory data and enable sign-in. Okay, I'm happy with that. I press accept, and now any user in the Squantoso tenant can sign into this application and use it using their Azure Active Directory account, their Office 365 identity, Microsoft Azure identity, whatever happens to be the thing that they were using before. If they're using Azure Active Directory, they can now use it to get in to this application. Let's quickly I'll show you what happens if we pick a different user and sign them in instead of the administrator, so we can show that they don't have the experience for the consent, an alternative user. See, there was no consent. I was just logged in. Okay. And let's just take a quick look as well at the information that was sent about the alternative user to the app. So there's some interesting stuff here. This is the immutable ID of the tenant they came from in Azure AD, so you can identify what organization they're from. This is the immutable ID of the user. You can think of this like a Windows SID. It's safe to use this ID to make security decisions about the user, because this might be my name, but I could change my name. This might be my first name, last name here, but these things could easily change. So they're not safe to make security decisions on because they're not rename safe. And here we can see that I authenticated with a password string. Let's actually go into the interesting task part of the application, and we'll create a task, finish build demo. And let's share this task with some other people who are going to help me with it. When I share, I can pick who I'm going to share with, and I can share with users and groups. And the edit field at the top is going to actually let me browse the directory to pick who I want to share with. Before we launch that, let's just get Fiddler going in the background. And I'm going to touch this edit field. And immediately the edit field has some JavaScript behind it that goes and does REST calls to the directory. And it just goes like you'd imagine in an address book. Just grab a bunch of the first bunch of users and groups that you find in the directory and show them here. Let's go look at that in Fiddler. These options calls are for the core support. And then here we go. Here is a get on, I should show, graph.windows.net. That's the REST endpoint that you're going to use to query the graph. Here's the tenant ID of alt@squantoso.com. And I'm just going to say, give me the first 7 users. And then the next call here says, give me the first 7 groups, and then just we'll show them in that dropdown. And if I were to do something like a type down to try to find new people, and we look at that, then here we have a more complex query. So I want to find users. I want to find the first 7. And I'm going to set a filter, find all of the users whose display name starts with STU, whose given name starts with STU, whose surname starts, et cetera. So I crafted up that query in the JavaScript and sent that REST call to the directory. It gives back a bunch of JSON, which I can then use to display this dropdown. So we'll share this task with Stuart. Great. OK, so that's as simple as it was to get the organization signed up to use the application, for other users to sign in, and for you to use the graph. Let me sign out. And I'd like to show you a couple of other things that Squantoso can do with this particular application now. One of the things that integrating with an enterprise identity management system does, it allows your application to adhere to corporate or organizational policies with respect to what it takes to authenticate your application. Oh, no. I'll hit refresh again. This particular view is looking at the Squantoso tenant. So I'm not looking at the application where it's registered by the developer anymore. This is where it has been consented to in the Squantoso tenant. The Squantoso administrator can see information, could see, if this were working, information about the, you know what? Let's start over with an incognito window. And we'll try to get signed in and show this. This requires multi-factor authentication. Because if you saw my Bill talk last year, I typoed my password right into, right under the screen, into the, you know, lives forever recording. And it was one of my favorite passwords. So now, it was a really good one. It had like lots of uppercase, lowercase, nonsensical stuff in it. But here we go. I'm going to sign in as the administrator now for the Squantoso tenant. So this is different than my Squan user account, which is actually also an administrator. And let me go to the Active Directory portion of the portal. Okay, we'll go to the Active Directory portion of the portal, and we'll go into the Squantoso tenant. We'll look at applications. And we'll find the to-do list reimagined app. There's a bunch of other apps, of course, there. And we can see information about the application, but also we can control things like access rules to access the Squantoso application. So let's say that I want to require multi-factor authentication just to visit this app. And not for everybody. Let's say I'm going to pick a group of users. The engineering staff needs to use multi-factor authentication. I could also do things like, well, the engineering staff accept users who are in some group that's managed by the help desk for people who have forgotten their phones and traveling and stuff like that. But we can have exceptions so that it's not a blanket. And in this case, require multi-factor. We can also do require multi-factor unless the user is on the corporate network as a defined set of IP addresses, but I'm not going to worry about that. Let's just turn this on and hit save. So now that authentication policy is enforced against just the to-do list app. If we go back to the to-do list application and I try to sign in with my Squan account, which is a part of the engineering staff group, now I get prompted for multi-factor authentication. And in fact, it's multi-factor authentication using a mobile app I have here on my phone. And I will check for an authorization request, and I will verify, yes. This is different than the SMS method, because we have multiple methods for authentication. There we go. So there I signed in. Now, here's another scenario I want you to think about. For this particular case, I didn't write any special logic in the to-do list application to handle this multi-factor sign-in. That was all handled by Azure AD. Nothing happened in the app's code. Now, let's imagine an even more complex scenario. Imagine your customer comes to you, and tell me if you think this could happen. Your customer comes to you and says, you know what, I've decided, since your application is so important and contains information that's so critical to my business, that I want you to prevent people with jailbroken phones from accessing my app, your app. Can you imagine what you would then go, oh boy, how am I going to implement that? Well, with what we do with Azure AD and the integration with Intune, we can actually make it possible, and we're working on this, to say, oh yeah, you can't get to that application unless you're coming from a non-jailbroken phone that is PIN protected, that has encryption set on it, and other rules that are related to the device health and device identity. And then the administrator will be able to configure those things, and you won't have to write any code to support it if you let your user sign in with Azure AD. All right, let's do one more thing. Let's actually look at the application. So here I have the to-do list reimagined app. It's an MVC application. It uses the OWIN model for handling its authentication. So there's OWIN middleware that we produce that does OpenID Connect sign-in, et cetera. Let's find out how that actually works. I'm going to start the app. I've set some breakpoints in interesting places. As it loads up, we should... OK, so here's the first place that we hit. There's a startup class over here at the very bottom of the screen, very difficult for you to see. And that startup class is going to initialize the OWIN pipeline. And this call here, configure auth, is going to initiate the authentication part of the pipeline. It's going to load the OpenID Connect and some other middleware. So if we hit continue, we'll jump to where that happens. That happens in this file here called startup.auth, which is a specially named file that you create. And here's the configure auth routine. And in the configure auth routine, these first two lines get the cookie middleware set up. So this middleware handles the session with the user's browser after they've signed in. And then a little bit further down here, we initialize the OpenID Connect middleware that you can get from us. And two of the essential lines are giving the client ID that you got from that registration. In here, we've put it in the web config. We load it out of config to initialize the middleware. The authority is the location of Azure AD. For most people, this is going to be login.windowsonline.com. But there's actually multiple instances of Azure AD in the world, depending on how many instances, individual instances of Windows of Microsoft Azure that we've created. So there's one, for example, in China. And then we have the public installation. So, but mostly this will be login.microsoftonline.com and the tenant that you're connecting to. Or if you don't know the tenant, there's a special, because it's a multi-tenant application, there's a special authority called common that you're going to send the user to. And then furthermore, we're going to catch some, process some notifications that can happen. One of the key notifications is, I received an authorization code. Remember, as part of the sign-in dance, we're going to receive both a token about the user. That received token is going to be grabbed by the middleware. The middleware is going to make sure it was signed by the right, by Azure AD. The middleware is going to take the information about the user out and put it into your application as a set of claims. And it'll also receive that authorization code. This next set of code here takes that authorization code and uses a library that we've created called the Active Directory Authentication Library, or ADAL, and it turns that authorization code into an access token and refresh token, and it caches those, and it handles all of the lifecycle of those. So once you've done this dance, the particular interesting line here is acquire token by authorization code after you've set everything up. Now your application has a cached token for this user that you can ask for later by calling acquire token, so you can call the Graph API or call the Office 365 API. And it also has the refresh token, and it takes care of all of the logic for using refresh tokens to get new access tokens when they expire, et cetera. So you don't have to worry about taking care of that yourself and managing all of that authentication state yourself. We'll do it for you in this library. Let's hit continue, and it'll finally put us back on the application. Let's take a look at the code behind the sign-in button. So I press sign-in. There's an account controller here. The account controller has the code for behind that sign-in button, and it's this hunk of code here which sends the OpenID Connect sign-in request, send an authentication challenge, and the middleware will automatically process the response when it comes back because the middleware is in the pipeline ahead of the application. We'll just hit continue there, and now the app has sent the request to Azure AD. Azure AD is about to sign the user in. Let's go to Fiddler again. And we'll take a look. Here's the call. And in fact, I've exploded this out just for time. Remember we called the authorization endpoint. We're using common because that's a multi-tenant application. And here's the rest of the request, the client ID of the application. The response mode means I want the results to return to me as a form post. I would like an authorization code and an ID token. The authorization code so I can call APIs, the ID token so I know who the user is. This is straight up OpenID Connect, which means I want OpenID Connect and I want the user's information in the ID token. The state traps information for the application about where to send, that the application can get back later. It's like, here's some opaque data, please make sure you send it back to me. In our case, we trap information about where to put the user back in the application. So if they hit the sign-in button on this particular page, please bring them back to that page. And then finally, the redirect URI that it's safe to send that token back to. In this case, you can see they're difficult to read, localhost account sign-in. That falls within the redirect URL that was registered for the application in the directory. All right. So that's a simple demo of integrating with Azure AD. If you go to github/squan, you can find the repo, webappgroupclaims.net. It's a fork of a basic sample that we have that shows you how to use group claims. And you can go ahead and do whatever you want with this particular piece of code. We're going to look at seeing how much of this we can back into our standard samples. But I prepared this one specially for build. Now, I showed a very simple case where I'm signing a user into a web app, but there's a lot more things that people do with applications today than just build web apps. You've got PC apps, you've got mobile apps, and Azure AD was designed to help you with all of the different topologies that are involved to make these applications work. So we have a typical application today. I like to call this the gross anatomy of a modern application. It involves having one or more web apps and one or more web APIs, where the web APIs are satisfying the needs of PC and mobile apps, and or if you have people just calling you from daemons or server apps, then how do you authenticate them to your web API? And often, more and more of the logic of the application is dropping from the web app into the web API, because you want to have all the action happening in one place. So the web app is simply becoming a presentation layer for the people using browsers, and it's calling the web API. And how do you do authentication from the web app to the web API, from the mobile app to the web API, from one web API to another? So, as a concrete example, DocuSign has a signing app on iOS where the mobile app talks to the DocuSign API, the DocuSign web API, and then the DocuSign web API talks to SharePoint to pick up a document to sign it and then to put it back. How do you preserve the user's identity all the way through that? Because when you arrive at SharePoint, you have to have the user's real identity, right? You can't just have DocuSign saying, well, I want to be this user now. It actually has to be a user that is a legitimate one who's already signed in with Azure AD. The way that we handle all of these scenarios and the way that we handle the fact that it could be an iOS app, an Android app, it could be browsers on a wide variety of platforms. You might be writing your server code in .NET or in Node.js or in Java. How do we make this all work? Well, we have decided to support a set of standard protocols. And really, when you look at this diagram, what it boils down to is our strategic protocols are OAuth2 and OpenID Connect. As it turns out, OpenID Connect is merely an extra layer, if you will, or an extension upon OAuth2.0. So that's where we're making most of our investment. We're doing that because these protocols are really friendly across all these different platforms. They're relatively straightforward to implement. If you have an HTTP stack, you can do a little bit of crypto and you can serialize JSON, then you can handle these protocols. So it makes it possible across all these apps. We also support WS Federation and SAML as ways to sign into web apps because of the popularity of those protocols today. A lot of people out there who already have an application that already supports SAML sign-in because of the demand to federate and connect with enterprise identity systems. So we support SAML as well. But this is basically our strategic approach on how we do this. And there are samples that show you how to do every single one of these scenarios in our developer center, in our developer guide, that you can find. And you can compose them together so you could create this entire topology if you wanted to. I talked a little bit about the Graph API. Let me just touch a few more elements here. So, of course, you can get at users, groups, devices, and other objects in the directory. You can see relationships. So you can see the organizational hierarchy the same way you would in, say, inside an address book, inside Outlook or something. That the relationships between users and the organizational hierarchy is also there. It's just plain old REST. Use the usual REST mechanisms to call and get back JSON or XML, but we prefer you call and get back JSON. And we support cores, as you saw, so you can make these calls right from JavaScript running in your web app, running in the browser. It's OData v3 compatible, and we're close to adding OData v4 compatibility as well. And there's a set of helper libraries if you don't want to make the REST calls directly, but you're welcome to make the REST calls directly. It's just as simple. But we have libraries out there for .NET, Cordova, iOS, and Android right now, and we're working on more. There's an interactive reference to show you all the different APIs, what a particular request looks like and what the response looks like that's available on MSDN. And you can also find that link from our developer guide, which I'll talk about when we get to the end. The ADAL library is something that we've put a considerable amount of investment into because, while for the graph, it's just REST calls, no big deal, go ahead and do it directly. When it comes to getting the authentication protocol right, while it is straightforward, we don't think it's worth your time to reproduce this code, or you might make security mistakes in the code. So we did create these libraries to simplify this for you so you didn't have to figure it out yourself, and we do encourage you to use these libraries, be they the ADAL library on the client side, or things like the OWN library, the Node.js libraries that we've created on the server side. They're all open source. You're welcome to contribute back. We love it when people contribute back. Or you can fork them. You can suck the whole source into your application. You're welcome to do all of those things. And we are working on more languages. So we do get requests for Python. We get requests for Ruby. We need to expand on our server side. We need to expand our support for things like Java. There's not enough there right now, and we're working on that. Okay, futures. 15 minutes to go, I'm gonna fly through a set of the things that we're working on that by no means represent all the things we're working on, but these are some interesting ones. When it comes to identity, an important aspect of identity is always keys and key management. We recently put into preview a capability that we call Key Vault. Key Vault is designed with, at least the initial preview of Key Vault was designed with a couple of core scenarios in mind. One is helping you get your secrets away from DevOps. So if you have storage keys and the storage keys are in your source code today, then a lot of people can be exposed to those keys. I don't know if you've ever, I remember reading this blog article that a fellow wrote. It was unrelated to Azure AD, but he was doing some prototyping, I think, in Ruby, and he checked, he put all his code into his GitHub organization, and then he realized, oh, I forgot. I have my Amazon S3 keys in my source code. I better go take them out. Within 5 minutes, he'd take them out. And he went to bed. He woke up the next morning, and he had several text warnings from Amazon and a phone call that his account had run up $2,500 in charges. Because there are people who have robots that watch GitHub for the check-in of things that look like keys. And then they take them and they abuse them. So we want to get these keys out of source as much as possible. Key Vault is a safe place to put keys, a specifically audited and monitored place to put keys. And the way that you get the keys out of the Key Vault is by authenticating to it with Azure AD. Another key scenario for Key Vault is to allow customers to bring their own keys. And this is something, as you get bigger and more successful, enterprise customers are going to come to you and they're going to say things like, well, for compliance reasons, I need to be in control of the encryption keys that you use to encrypt my data at rest in your application. It's not going to work for me if you tell me it's encrypted at rest with your keys. I have to control those keys. So let's go through two quick scenarios for this. It kind of explains it so that it comes to life. The first is, I want to get my secrets out of my code, say my storage keys. And the way this works is, you as the developer create a key vault, and you put your storage keys in it. And this can just be, it's a small number of people in your team, create the key vault, put the storage keys into it. Good. Then you go register your application in Azure AD so it has an identity. And along with that identity, we're going to give it a credential, which is a certificate. You upload that certificate to Azure AD and into your Azure project, and then you can throw away the PFX file. You don't need to remember the private key. And now, then you go and you grant that application access to those keys in the Key Vault. At runtime, your app wakes up. It asks for a token from Azure AD, and it sends that token to the Key Vault, and it fetches back all of the storage keys, and it uses them at runtime. The storage keys are no longer in your source. And the key that's used by the application to authenticate to the directory is not in your source, right? And now you can run, this is spontaneous applause. One hand clapping is fantastic, thank you. We worked hard on this one. We actually worked really hard on this one. Another example, a bring your own key example, is a work that we're doing with Office 365 and what they call the advanced encryption scenario. And this is a case where the customer says, I'm going to use Office 365, but I need all of the mailbox data encrypted to keys that I own. The way that this is going to work is the customer goes, and you can imagine this, try to imagine this in the context of your application. So the customer goes to Key Vault, creates a Key Vault, and uploads an encryption key to the Key Vault, an asymmetric encryption key. Customer has the choice with our system to have that stored and protected in software or even in a hardware security module. So let's say they decide, put the key into a hardware security module. And then they go and they grant Exchange, which has an identity in Azure Active Directory, the ability to use that key. Exchange then goes and creates one or more encryption keys that it's going to use to encrypt mailbox data. And it one by one sends those to Key Vault and says, please encrypt this key for me. And it gets back a bunch of, stay with me here, encrypted encryption keys, which it stores. Okay, so now it has encrypted mailbox data and encrypted keys. Everything's encrypted. When it wakes up and needs to do work on a mailbox, it takes the encrypted encryption key, sends it to the Key Vault, it gets decrypted by the Key Vault, comes back to Exchange, and now it can do work on the mailbox. This chain of trust through the keys is suitable to satisfy the compliance requirements of many customers, and you should be thinking about this as well if you have similar scenarios. Okay, that's Key Vault. So Azure Active Directory is identity management as a service for organizations like Squantoso, like your company. It helps with identity management for your employees. But there's more that we can do here. We can provide identity management services that work for an application that also faces out to customers. And we call this Azure AD B2C. We're simply taking Azure AD as it exists today and adding features to it. So we get all the goodness of the fact that it's in 28 data centers, has huge scalability, that it has data center failover, that it copies data between data centers, that it has the intrusion detection and advanced monitoring capabilities. We take all of that and we add to it the ability to sign in with social IDs, the ability to sign in with what we call application local user accounts. So you can have user accounts that are just for your application that are stored in Azure AD. We take care of helping users sign up, sign in, reset their passwords, change their profiles. And you do all of this with customized UI for your application, so it looks just like your application, and using the programming model that I talked about earlier. No difference in the programming model. It's just Azure AD with some more features. Now, this one's not, it will have a free level to it, to a certain number of users and authentications, but beyond that, there'll be consumption pricing, so that we get paid fairly for the amount of the system you use based on the number of users you put in and the number of authentications per month that you do. I promise you, you're going to find this very affordable. The people that we've talked to already, because we can take advantage of this huge scale we already have, the people we've already talked to, take a look at what they're doing today to handle customer sign-in, and how much it would cost to use our stuff, plus all of the security benefits and everything that you get from it. And it's a pretty compelling proposition. This is in work right now. Let me show you an example. A fictional Contoso Airlines wants to build a check-in system for their guests, their travelers. On one side, we've got a customized sign-in page. On the other side, a customized sign-up page. You can see that there's local accounts for the application. Those are all hosted in Azure AD. We provide ways for users to reset their password, et cetera. On the sign-up side, we can help you gather information from the user when they sign up, including arbitrary extended information that you define, like frequent flyer number. We'll gather that information, we'll put it in the directory, we'll let you query it through the Graph API, you'll be able to get it in sign-in tokens when the user signs into your application. Azure AD B2C. We're working hard on this, it'll be in preview soon. Another thing that we're working on is there's a lot of applications out there that would like to sign users in both with Microsoft accounts and with Azure AD accounts, but today you have to do two pieces of work to do that. So we're going to blend these together so that there is one endpoint you'll be able to visit. You'll be able to send users there with OAuth or OpenID Connect requests. When they arrive, they'll have one sign-in experience. Well, we'll take care of figuring out are they signing in with their consumer identity, or are they signing in with their work identity? We'll sort all that out, and you'll get back a response, and it'll tell you where they came from. But you'll just have one SDK and one endpoint that you need to do, that you need to use to get users across all of this. At the same time, we're taking this opportunity to build a new registration portal for how you register your application with us. We'll take this out of the Azure portal, so you won't need an Azure subscription to get to this portal. And we're going to take everything that we've learned about how to streamline the experience and incorporate it there so that it'll be a simpler way to get your application registered to work with either Microsoft account or Azure Active Directory. This week at Build, the Office team is also talking about how they're taking their APIs today for consumer OneDrive, for example, so the consumer files API, the business files API, the consumer calendar and email API, the business calendar and email API, and they're unifying those. So now you'll be able to send your user to sign in, and then you'll be able to connect to their calendar, and you won't have to have logic to figure out, well, which fork do I take? Is this a user a Microsoft account, or is it an Azure AD account? Is this their corporate OneDrive, or is this their consumer OneDrive? It'll all just be one thing that you have to do. Did I hear one hand clap there too? All right. Let's take a look at what this will look like. So I have the fictional Fabricam calendar application. The user's been sent to the unified endpoint to sign in. And if Kelly enters her work address, then she'll see her work sign-in page. She'll see her work sign-in page, and on she goes from there. If Kelly were to show up and enter her Microsoft account, Kelly at Outlook.com, then we detect that as well on the sign-in page, and we send her through to the Microsoft account sign-in page. And finally, if at some point she'd used Fabricam Calendar with both her consumer and business identities, at some point she might return and we'll tile up all the different choices that she has so she can decide, well, do I want to sign in with my work identity or do I want to sign in with my consumer identity? And we'll further blend and simplify this sign-in experience more and more. What you saw right now is the beginning. This will be in preview also very soon. Finally, we're also doing work on the device side of the equation. You might have heard with Windows 10, similar to Windows 8, where you can sign into Windows 8 with your consumer identity, you'll be able to sign into Windows 10 with your work identity through Azure AD Join. And once you've joined your desktop to Azure AD through this process, you'll get single sign-on to Kerberos-based on-premises resources. You'll get single sign-on to native applications that use the Web Account Manager API. If you want to learn more about this, Vittorio's going to talk about it in his session later this week on Friday. And then finally, web apps that use Azure AD for sign-in, well, you'll also get automatic single sign-on. So I can walk up to my Windows 10 desktop, sign into my Windows 10 desktop. If I were to go to the to-do list application and press sign-in, I'd be signed in. I don't have to enter my name and password or do anything because I've already signed into my desktop. Also, that's a good one. We're doing similar work on iOS and Android devices. So if you have multiple applications on your iOS device that all use Azure AD to sign in, it can be a real pain in the butt to have to sign in. So I open Word or something, and then I have to sign in with my corporate name and password, this tiny keyboard that I'm putting my 16-character corporate password into. And then I launch your mobile application, and I have to do the same thing. That's not a good user experience. So we're building authentication broker applications that we put on iOS and Android that if you use the ADAL API in your application, when the user goes to sign in, they'll be switched over to the broker app, and we can use an account they've already signed in with because the broker will remember about the user's sign-in. It's also the system that we'll use to put the device identity into the equation when the user's signing in so that we can do things like that jailbreak detection through Intune, or if the user has encrypted the device, et cetera. We can examine the health state of the device, the management state of the device, through the broker applications. This is going to come in the form of our authenticator applications we have today for multi-factor auth. It's going to grow into having these broker capabilities so that your applications using our SDKs will have a better experience on mobile devices as well. Okay, so if you would like to get started, it's very simple. You're going to need Azure so that you can get Azure AD. If you already have Office 365 or you already have Microsoft Azure, then you already have Azure AD and you can do experiments with it. Just go to the Azure portal, find the Azure Active Directory section. Today, just this morning, we published a new developer guide that has a series of new stuff in it, like getting started topics. If you want to know right now how to build an iOS application or an Android application, or a MVC, or a JavaScript web application, there are topics now you can go to, and it tells you, here it is, here's the important things you need to know about building this application, step by step. To find that developer guide, you go to, you can't actually find the link off of the Azure portal right now. We're working on getting that fused together, but if you go to the link that's on the screen here, you can find that developer guide, and we'll make sure that you can get to it from Azure.com, documentation, identity access management, Active Directory, develop. Just remember that. It's simple, right? Just remember that. And then eventually, it'll rise in the search rankings as you use it. While you're here at Build, go to both of Vittorio's talks. I'm sure he'd love to have you. Go to Matt Veloso's talk. We announce every new feature that we do on our team blog. If you can't remember the address, just search Active Directory Team blog, Google or Bing. It's always the top one. So you'll always be able to find it. And with that, remember, you all are going to be successful. And if you're successful, you're going to be asked to integrate with Enterprise Identity Management. Don't wait. Do it now. Integrate with Azure Active Directory. It's simple. It comes with tremendous benefits for your customer, for their user experience, for you and your ability to promote your application, get people signed up, get people signed in, keep people engaged. And we would love to have you. This is a big deal for us, and it's all anchored on standard protocols and open source. And with that, thank you very much. The ticker says that I have 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 minute left. I will take questions in the expert area. There's a, you know, it's the download and meet the experts. I'm gonna shoot over there right now. So if you'd like to meet with me or Vittorio and ask questions, we'd be happy to handle those for you. Thank you.